Our apologies for the garbled sound. We're going to cut in just a little bit early with the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom show and do an introduction and then toss in a little little music. This is something by a group called Queen. You probably recognize it. Now, this is the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom show being brought to you on WCOM LP, Chapel Hill and Carrboro, 100 watt station, all volunteer group, bringing you stuff that relates mostly to the community, although we bring other things too, particularly in Wilf. My name is Dick Paddock. I'm the co-host, and my other co-host is Tana Hartman. And she's ready to take off on today's topic, I think.
Hi, Dick. Thanks. Folks, we've talked a number of times about corporate personhood and the corporatization of America and the American economy and political systems. Corporate power is at the root of most, if not all, of the problems we are facing today. Climate denial, the Wall Street bailouts, media consolidation, environmental problems. Wall Street banks insist on deregulation, and they continue to engage in practices that brought them to the brink of disaster and created a financial collapse that threw millions of Americans into poverty. Agribusiness is getting tax subsidies for foods that make us sick, for farming practices that destroy our rivers, our soils, our climate, and our oceans, and for trade practices that are impoverishing people and driving them into starvation both at home and abroad. Private prison corporations press for laws that boost prison populations. Health and insurance, drug companies, squeezing families and employers and governments to get premiums and out-of-pocket costs covered while they deliver fewer and fewer benefits to us. The corporate 1% invests in an army of lobbyists and in massive campaign contributions, and they get payoffs in policies that boost their share of the national wealth while moving the middle class toward poverty. What's the result of having the government cater to big corporations? Joblessness? A poverty rate that's up 27% in the past 5 years? Insolvent state and local governments and school districts? Crumbling infrastructures? And in the meanwhile, the viable solutions that could help us are blocked by powerful corporate lobbies. Now, I know there are a lot of caring, compassionate, good people that work for corporations. But in an economic system that privileges profits and returns on investments over everything else, What is happening? It's destroying us. So what do we, the people, have? What chance do we have of getting government to work for us instead of working for corporations and for Wall Street? A lot of people throw up their hands and say, can't be done. You know, the rich have always ruled and they always will. But I'm not so pessimistic anymore. I'm getting more hopeful as I watch what's happening with Occupy and with a growing number of groups around the country. Today, I'm going to be looking at, Dick and I are going to be looking at some of the things, stories that are in Yes Magazine. Yes Magazine is an amazing publication. If you have never heard of it or never seen it, go online to yesmagazine.org and take a look. You'll find it a really inspiring publication. Now, it's not going to be easy. It's not going to be fast. And there's a lot of work that we have to do. But we, each of us, is going to have to get involved and do something. One of the issues is corporate personhood. The Occupy movement has really gone a long way toward opening up discussions around this issue. And thousands of people are now demanding change on issues like corporate personhood, on issues like money in politics, on using strategies that range from constitutional amendments to street theater. So Yes Magazine this month identifies 9 strategies to end corporate rule. Now, again, why do we want to end corporate rule? Because the policies that are advocated by the 1% are bankrupting the rest of us. But we should keep heart that we do have some power. There are a number of things we can do. One is we can amend the Constitution to end corporate personhood. Two, we can get involved in grassroots campaigns to take control back at the local level. It's happening around the country. Three, we can hold corporations accountable to our laws. Excuse me. Sorry, sneezing today. We can support independent media, things like this little radio station. We can keep the internet free. We can protect the commons. That's the commons is what we all depend on for our survival. We can vote. We can vote to regain democracy. And we can learn about moving our money to places where it will do good rather than just helping to underwrite the work done by big corporations. This issue of Yes Magazine has some ways to decorporatize your money. We need to get creative. We need to raise awareness. It's started, but we've got a long way to go. And ultimately, we need to reinvent the way we do business. Capitalism is not the only way. There is an alternative. And we will, I hope, be talking about that later on this show farther down the road, not today. Today, I want to focus on Citizens United and the issue of corporate personhood. In 2010, the U.S. Supreme Court ruled that we cannot prevent corporations from spending unlimited money to influence elections. In Citizens United v. Federal Election Commission, the court ignored the fact that corporations are artificial creations of state law and they have government-derived advantages. Corporations, in short, were ruled to be people, and corporate money is speech. And laws that restrict corporate political spending were ruled to violate the First Amendment. Now, we know that something like 80% of the American public is opposed to that ruling, and almost as many support a constitutional amendment to reverse the Citizens United decision, according to a lot of polls. So if Americans so clearly oppose the fabrication of corporate people who can use the Constitution to strike down the laws of we, the real people, how did Citizens United ever happen? In fact, it's the result of a well-funded, organized 30-year campaign to establish corporate constitutional rights as a means to trump democratic laws. Now, let me tell you, in the interest of full disclosure, that I am speaking from an article written by Jeff Clements. Jeff Clements, C-L-E-M-E-N-T-S. Clements is a co-founder of Free Speech for People. He served as an assistant attorney general and chief of the Public Protection and Advocacy Bureau in the office of the Massachusetts Attorney General. And what I'm saying today is excerpted from and adapted from his new book called Corporations Are Not People. It's published in 2012 by Barrett Kohler Publishers. Clements goes on to say that the Citizens United decision killed the Federal Bipartisan Campaign Reform Act, which is also known as the McCain-Feingold Law. The court reversed a century of law and overruled one of its own decisions from just a few years ago, which affirmed our right to keep corporations out of politics. In the wake of Citizens United, corporations can now spend unlimited sums of money in every federal, state, and local election in the country. This challenges the very premise of American government. Can a government based on the will of equal, sovereign human beings coexist with a government based on unregulated corporate spending? Well, you tell me, but I'm guessing the answer is no.
It interests me that in spite of the fact that corporations can give unlimited amounts of money, ordinary, real, breathing human beings are limited to $2,500 per campaign. And that was brought forth to me very graphically when I read an email. I happened to be on Alan Grayson's email because I just think he's so damned entertaining. But he said that he's going to max out his contribution to Dennis Kucinich's re-election campaign, and that meant he could contribute $2,500. Now, if he happened to be incorporated in the state of Florida, where he happens to live, he could give unlimited amounts of money, but he's not a corporation. He's actually got a pulse.
Yeah, unfortunately, real human beings are limited in a number of ways now. The largest 100 corporations in 2010 had combined revenues of $13.1 trillion. I don't know about you, but a trillion is really hard for me to get my head around. Dick, can you give us a way of how do we grasp a $1 trillion?
I really don't know. You have to think of acres and acres of little tiny sheets of graph paper.
Oh, God. Yes. They had profits of $605 billion in the 2008 election cycle. And according to OpenSecrets.org, their total spending on federal campaigns that year was about $5.3 billion. Now, diversion of just 2% of corporate profits into that election cycle would have represented more than twice the money that was actually spent. That kind of money utterly dominates politics and elections and policy making. And the domination is increasing. In 2010, the first election after Citizens United, hundreds of millions of dollars flowed into campaigns across the country with no requirement about source disclosure. Politicians who didn't do what corporations were bidding them to do, whether on health care, energy, or financial reform, were bombarded with negative ads that were funded by corporate front groups, such as the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, various political action committees, and other anonymously funded organizations, including Citizens United, the lobbying group whose lawsuit led to the Citizens United case. Now, 2012 looks like it's going to be much, much worse.
One of the things that I saw recently that I'd like to know the answer to, and that is to find out who's ultimately getting the money. Where is it being spent? Is it going all to TV stations? Is there print advertising being cranked out? What is it? That's one of the things we don't know.
No, but I expect it. I mean, a lot of it is going into media, going to the media for the ads.
Or is it going directly to bribes?
Well, I don't know about that. Now, I think there's still some laws about bribery, out-and-out bribery. So they have to cover their tracks some way.
Yeah, but they're called campaign contributions, too.
Yeah, when you look at the return on the money, it's pretty impressive. I mean, you gotta wonder. Anyway, this long campaign to expand the ostensible rights of corporations, particularly their so-called free speech right to spend money on lobbying and campaigns, election campaigns, and to veto public interest laws, has actually been going on a very, very, very long time. And I'll talk about this another day, but there is a long history, some 200 years of history, of corporations using our courts and our legislative systems to increase their rights and diminish ours. But more recently, as Clements is talking about, in the past 30 years, corporate-friendly trade and tax policies have managed to move jobs overseas. They have destroyed our manufacturing capacity. They've produced vast wage and income inequalities. They've gutted local economies and communities. And our energy policy? Oh, man. Where do we start? Control of our energy policy by global fossil fuel corporations and unregulated corporate lobbying, even for weapons the Pentagon does not want, leads to endless war in the Middle East and uncontrolled military spending. Deregulation has led to sprawl, to loss of wilderness and open land, to accelerated environmental devastation. The health of Americans has become secondary to layers of taxpayer subsidies and preferential treatment for corporate food giants and coal and utility corporations. It's resulted in epidemic levels of obesity, asthma, and type 2 diabetes. Corporations more and more blatantly buy politicians and legislation. They block or strike down laws that protect people. And Americans, unsurprisingly, become more cynical about politics and government. Government of the people has been replaced by government of the corporations. In fact, it's government of the corporations, for the corporations, by the corporations. The roots of Citizens United reach back some 40 years. By the end of the 60s, Americans had become increasingly aware that corporations were using our rivers, air, oceans, and land as sewers and dumps, taking profits and leaving most people and communities to cover the costs. In April 1970, 20 million Americans of every age and political viewpoint went to the streets and public spaces on the very first Earth Day and insisted on a better balance between corporations and people, between an extraction economy and nature. So how did American democracy respond then? We had a Republican president and bipartisan support, but Congress enacted the Clean Water Act, the Federal Water Pollution Control Amendments, the Clean Air Act extension, the Toxic Substances Control Act, the Safe Drinking Water Act, the Eastern Wilderness Act, the Surface Mining Control and Reclamation Act, the Endangered Species Act, the Marine Mammal Protection Act, the Resource Recovery Act, and the first fuel economy standards for cars. And
to say nothing of, if you recall, the Environmental Protection Agency.
The EPA.
That was actually Nixon's baby. I remember when that went into effect. I was working with some people at EPA here in Research Triangle Park, and the joke going around at the time was, if my boss calls, get his name and number. Because they had a massive reorganization that went along with creating an EPA.
Oh, yes. Okay. I think they've done a lot of those since then. Corporatist dogma says that only the market, the so-called free market, can fix big problems.
But, of course, they don't want to actually use the free market because that would be out of control. And they can't stand to be out of control.
Yeah, well, they don't repair things. They simply don't. And it was citizens that brought about the first Earth Day and those innovations, not corporations. But Clements mentions that not everybody was happy back then about the results. Lewis Powell was a corporate lawyer from Richmond, Virginia, and he guided some of the biggest corporations on the planet to launch a counterattack. A former president of the American Bar Association, Powell served on boards of directors for more than a dozen international corporations, including tobacco giant Philip Morris. Now, in preparing for strategy discussions within the U.S. Chamber of Commerce and among corporate leaders, on August 23, 1971, Lewis Powell prepared what the chamber would call the Powell Memo. Powell titled his memo, Attack on American Free Enterprise System. He explained the problem. No thoughtful person can question that the American economic system is under broad attack. And he had a solution. Corporate leaders must use an activist-minded Supreme Court and other opportunities to shape social, economic, and political change to the advantage of corporations. Strength lies in organization, in careful long-range planning and implementation, in consistency of action over an indefinite period of years. Well, it's no longer indefinite. It's pretty clear. It's brought us up to the present.
Yeah. It's very interesting that that whenever conservatives get upset with something the Supreme Court does, they scream activist judges.
Yeah.
And yet that's precisely what Powell's prescribing.
Right.
And didn't he eventually become a...
Yeah, I was just going to say, You just invoked Nixon for the EPA less than 6 months after the secret Powell memo went to the chamber. Richard Nixon nominated Powell for the Supreme Court, and the Senate voted 89-1 for confirmation. Incredible. Powell was a counsel to the cigarette industry and a director of Philip Morris, and he had already begun testing the radical idea of corporate speech rights under the Constitution. In the late 60s, he had sued the U.S. on behalf of cigarette corporations, arguing that the government's assertion that cigarettes cause death was not proven and controversial.
Sounds familiar.
Yeah.
I understand that we have another controversy similarly about the science of climate change. It's the same trick with a different name attached to it. That's all it is.
Well, Powell actually, I think, initiated the idea that, you know, of negative free speech. You can't force corporations to say something that might hurt them, damage their profits. If Americans had known of that Chamber of Commerce amendment, what would they have done? What did Powell mean by an activist-minded Supreme Court, and what kind of social, economic, and political change was he thinking the court should foster? Well, back then, nobody even asked those questions. Nobody knew. And the memo was not disclosed. And with Powell on the court, corporations recognized their opportunity and got to work implementing his long-range plan. Philip Morris and other corporations funded a host of new legal foundations in every corner of the country, among them the National Chamber Litigation Center, the Pacific, Mid-Atlantic, Mid-America, Great Plains, Washington, Northeastern, New England, and Southeastern legal foundations. Corporations and these foundations filed litigation in every forum that was available. They argued that laws across the country violated corporate rights. They equated corporate deregulation with liberty. And that is a myth we're still fed to this day, that corporations are there protecting liberty.
Yeah, although they're, of course, only protecting themselves.
Yes, they're protecting their liberties, their privileges, in fact, not for the rest of us. They did not describe corporations for what they are, powerful legal entities that are created by state laws and given special advantages by the state.
I'd be interested in finding out if Elaine Marshall is... if she gets reelected, is planning to do anything about revoking some corporate charters. We ought to task her to do that, because theoretically, as Secretary of State, she could do that. I don't know what's involved in details, but it is in fact possible. Originally, corporations were chartered for like 20 years,
yeah,
but they could be revoked at any time because they had mm-hmm. a specific product or task they were to do, and B, if they did not do it responsibly, they could be shut down in a snap of fingers, stroke
That's
of
right.
a pen.
And that dates back to the early years of this country, of right. this nation. And Dick is absolutely right. There were strict requirements and there was strict regulation. Corporations were viewed very suspiciously by the founding fathers.
And now, mothers. Don't forget them.
Yeah, well, they didn't have a say in all of this, though. They're not the ones who drafted this.
Well, yes and no. I mean, there is pillow talk.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah, I'm one of those women who thinks that you got to be actively involved. That pillow talk may be great, but it's not enough. And as we know only too well, maybe had there been more mothers, well, I don't know. Margaret Thatcher was a mother.
You know? So was Golda Meir.
Yes. So maybe being a mother is not enough, but at least being a mother gives you a fierce sense of, you know, what it means to protect your offspring. Anyway, where was I?
Talking about the founding.
Oh, the lawyers at this time demanded the right of corporations to be heard, and the rights of corporations to speak out. And they were called for the end of discrimination against corporations. Oh, yes, they are so discriminated against. Anyway, this campaign was carried out both in the courts and in the forum of public opinion. And it sought to redefine the role of corporations in American society. It told us that we should view corporations not as mere economic tools that are useful but politically dangerous, but that they were the pillars of liberty. Now, these are lies, patent lies, but very useful lies. We have been taught to trust corporations, to believe, and to this day, people do. You know, even the most well-meaning people still think, oh, corporations, you know, we shouldn't badmouth corporations, or we can't take away their rights, but they're thinking perhaps of little mom-and-pop corporations, small businesses, and they're losing out in this. Small corporations, small business entities are not what we're talking about. We're talking about the large, massive, multinational corporations. They're the ones that have wrought so much damage. Anyway, the first victory for corporate rights came in 78 with a corporate attack on Massachusetts election laws in a case called First National Bank of Boston v. Bilotti. Now, the Gillette Corporation, the Bank of Boston, and Digital Equipment Corporation, which was the employer of my husband when he was first out of college right there in Boston. And I remember DEC as they were called, when they had just a handful of employees. I mean, you could count them, two hands. Anyway, they filed a lawsuit challenging a state law that banned corporate political spending in citizen referendum ballots. And conservative leaders of those large corporations wanted to go beyond spending their own money to defeat a progressive income tax vote that year. They wanted to use unlimited corporate funds. Well, after losing in the Massachusetts courts, the corporations took their claim all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court, and there they found a sympathetic audience led by, guess who? Lewis Powell. And Powell cast the deciding vote in the 5-4 decision and wrote the court's opinion, despite strong dissenting views from Justice William Rehnquist and others. Rehnquist was a conservative, remember. So Powell declared that corporations are persons and speakers, and corporate money is speech under the First Amendment. So for the first time, not technically, actually, there's a little more to it than this. First time in 200 years of American history, corporations had launched a successful constitutional attack, well, maybe constitutional attack, on laws regulating corporate spending in elections.
Could we take a break now? We
sure.
Need to, it's about half past the hour, and it's time for us to acknowledge the people who brought us here and also our underwriter. Our underwriter is Internationalist Bookstore at 405 West Franklin Street in Chapel Hill. And we encourage you to stop by and find the things that they have on their shelves, which are things that you generally would have to dig through or order at the large bookstores that you find, pardon the expression, large corporate bookstores, big box stores. Also recommend that you check their calendar, because they provide cultural and educational programs as part of their operation. That's Internationalist Bookstore, 405 West Franklin Street in Chapel Hill. And their website, if you want to check out there and see if there's something on the calendar or whatever new stuff they have on the website, that is internationalistbooks.org. This is the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom Hour that we call the Wake Up Call, because everybody needs to be awakened at all hours of the day and night. We've got to be vigilant. And our website is triangle WILPF.org. That's triangle WILPF.org. And the website for the station here, WCOM, is WCOMFM.org. And if you are able to get the broadcast now, but you won't be able to get it when you get home, you can stream it. Because we're such a low-power station, we stream it on the Internet from the WCOMFM.org website. So you can just go there, click on the Listen button, and whatever's on live on the air at the time will stream into your computer. There are a couple of announcements we want to make as public services. They're going right along with the theme of today's program is a committee to end corporate personhood that is being run by Occupy Durham. And they're organizing to get the city council in Durham to endorse a resolution for an amendment to the U.S. Constitution to reverse corporate personhood. And just get it out. You can contact the Occupy Durham General Assembly through David Kirsch at mediation@gmail.com. And there's a, this resolution that they're asking this Durham City Council to adopt is very similar to the one that was adopted here in Chapel Hill and I believe also in Carrboro. So they're just, they're playing catch up.
And I've got one here that is coming from the Occupy movement. A coalition of Occupy groups led by Occupy Portland in Oregon is calling on people to target corporations that are part of the American Legislative Exchange Council, ALEC, with direct actions in public events later this month. The Occupy groups, organizing under the banner Shut Down the Corporations, sees ALEC as the prime example of the way corporations buy off legislators and craft legislation that serves the interests of corporations and not people. ALEC was instrumental in creating the anti-labor legislation in Wisconsin last year and the racist bill SB 1070 in Arizona, among many other measures that have been pushed or passed in state houses across the country. ALEC uses its very large coffers and wealthy membership to spread free market, corporate-friendly laws around the country. The day of action is slated for Leap Day, February 29th. And according to the call of action, we call on the Occupy movement and everyone seeking freedom and justice to join us on this day of action. There's been a theft by the 1% of our democratic ability to shape and form the society in which we live, and our society is steered toward the destructive pursuit of consumption, profit, and greed at the expense of all else. Now, you can learn more about this, for one place, at commondreams.org. You can also go to, what's the website here? Let's see. You can go look at ALEC Exposed. You can just Google that, ALEC Exposed. And I'm not seeing any other stuff. But go to commondreams.org. And this was something that was published just yesterday, February 21st, in Common Dreams. Okay, so Shut Down the Corporations, February 29th. Reclaim your future from the 1%. Go to shutdownthecorporations.org.
And there's something else going on that we need to bring to your attention, and that is those of you who are concerned about public education and effective education in Chapel Hill, which should be everybody, needs to know that there is a corporation called the National Heritage Academies that is trying to start a charter school in Chapel Hill, Carrboro City Schools area. And we don't know where it's going to be. We don't know how big it's going to be, but they claim that they can put one up and have it ready by this coming August. And there are several things that are concerning about it, not the least of which is the fact that it will, if they build a school, the city schools, Chapel Hill, Carrboro, will be forced to pay for it. And they will also, for every child that comes out of the Chapel Hill, Carrboro City Schools and goes to the charter school, money will be required to be spent by the city schools directly with the charter school. There's also a good deal of concern about where it's going to be sited because that hasn't been decided or at least made available to us. And one of the things that is very disturbing for us is that we see this as a way to effectively resegregate our public schools and derail the diversity of our public schools. So we want to advise you of this and let you know that there is going to be a charter school discussion on tomorrow at either 4 or 7 p.m. and on the 28th, which would be, I guess that's
Tuesday.
That's Tuesday next week at 4 p.m. or 7 p.m. And the discussions are being held at the Maple View Agricultural Center on Dairyland Road. I don't know how easy it is to find, but I managed to figure it out.
It's actually pretty easy.
Is it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Uh-huh. Just go straight out North Greensboro in Carrboro, you know, or you can come from the other side from, you know, Martin Luther King Boulevard, Old Airport Road in Chapel Hill. And, but you can get, if you go out Old 86 to Dairyland, and then just follow Dairyland and you'll see it.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I would have gone out to Dodson's.
Out 54?
Yeah, out 54 and picked
you
up.
You can do that way too.
Yeah,
out to my house, yes.
Right.
Out to Highway 54 to Dodson's Crossroads,
turn right
at the Kraken, and follow it to, but then you've got to turn right again.
Turn right again when you get to Dairyland.
To Dairyland and right. Follow it and it'll be on your left. I think on your left then.
But you can also Google it or Yahoo it and get a map. So we encourage you to show up if you are concerned about schools, and you should be, at Maple View Agricultural Center tomorrow evening at either 4 p.m. or 7 p.m. And also on February 28th, which is a Tuesday, also at 4 p.m. or 7 p.m. Thank you all for your concern.
Okay, we're back. Citizens United. It is the crowning touch, crowning glory on a decades-long campaign of organized corporate radicalism that was there to inscribe the rights of corporations into law. And those rights now trump those of ordinary human beings. You try to fight a corporation on anything, whether it is over your health care or over the environment, over GMOs in your food. You're going to find it really hard. Although I will have to say on a positive note, Monsanto has just been found guilty in France of poisoning food.
Wow. Well, that's those French guys. You know we hate the French.
Well, let me tell you, large corporations are actually targeting the EU. The EU has been more strict on this,
right?
This sort of stuff, because they actually realize that you have to protect your people, not just your corporations, but the corporations.
You also have to protect your crops, because they can be contaminated to the point where you lose control.
Well, it's true. That's true too. But they are under siege. Multinational corporations are really working globally now, not just in this country.
Right, and they have budgets that exceed the budgets of some of the smaller EU countries, I suspect.
Oh yes. And by the way, did you know that Wells Fargo, which took over, swallowed Wachovia here, Wells Fargo made, between 2008 and 2010, made $49.4 billion and got $681 million in tax refunds. And that's on top of paying no taxes. They didn't just get a refund. They paid no taxes and got a refund. So did GE and Verizon and Boeing and a whole bunch of others. In fact, in that period of time from 2008 to 2010, 29 large corporations paid zero in taxes, and they received refunds totaling, get this, $10.6 billion. Amazing. Just amazing. For a tax subsidy of $8.4 billion, General Electric spent $84.4 million on lobbying. What's that return? Your math's better than mine. But I would swear that is a 100-to-1 return on investment.
That's about almost exactly right, yeah.
Yeah. And that means, wow, 10,000%. So you tell me, did they really deserve that? I don't think so. Another myth is that we're told that we tax corporations corporate income at 35%, the highest in the world. But we don't really. More than half of the Fortune 400 companies showed profits every year from 2008 to 2010. Huge profits. And of those, about a quarter paid less than 10%. Their average tax rate, 18.5%. That's less than I pay. In fact, that's what a human being pays on a $60,000 taxable income. That's amazing. How is it? I don't have any deductions. That's my problem. You know, I didn't make $60,000, but I still paid more taxes than these guys did. I think it is Warren Buffett paid something like 17.4% in taxes, and his staff paid 36% in taxes. So anyway, it's the money, you know, corporations get more than what they pay for. Anyway, with this back, we're going to wrap it up soon. Where am I? I'm losing my place here. On the upside, the same day that the Supreme Court handed down its ruling in Citizens United, two groups, Free Speech for People and Move to Amend, launched a campaign for a constitutional amendment to overturn the ruling. So far, they've gathered thousands and thousands of petition signatures, and they've made lots of public speeches and media appearances. In the meantime, those groups have been joined by a lot of others. And here's where the action is on reclaiming the Constitution for human beings. United for the People is a newly formed umbrella organization listing more than 50 groups that have united under the banner of demanding a constitutional amendment to restore the promise of democracy in the United States. And I'm sorry, Dick, did I kick you? In addition to links to all the cooperating organizations, the group's website, United for the People, that's the number four, unitedforthepeople.org, provides a list of events, resources, and tools. In the 2 years since the Citizens United decision, there a number of senators and representatives have introduced resolutions, 18 in all, I think, calling for amendments to overturn Citizens United. And cities around the country have passed resolutions calling for constitutional amendments, including our own right here, not too long ago. So there is something we can do. If you really believe that corporations should not be allowed to spend unlimited sums to influence election campaigns and policy in the Congress and, at any level of government, then you need to take some action. And you can do that by going to movetoamend.org, which is, let's see, I've got it right here somewhere. Movetoamend.org. And there is, you can sign the petition that says, "We, the people of the United States of America, reject the U.S. Supreme Court's ruling in Citizens United. We call for constitutional amendments that will abolish corporate personhood. Human beings, not corporations or other entities, are persons entitled to constitutional rights. Establish that money is not speech. Guarantee the right to vote and to participate and to have our votes and participation count. It should be one human being, one living, breathing person, one vote, not $1, one vote. Protect local communities, their economies and democracies against control and domination by large corporations or other entities like the WTO and World Bank." And these concepts are being drafted into amendment language, but you can sign the petition at www.movetoamend.org.
Something else that doesn't go directly with corporate personhood per se, but is very important, is the fact that you have to be careful not to lose your right to vote because of the voter ID tricks that they're pulling and the limitations that the Republicans, by and large, there may be some Democrats doing it, but I doubt it, But the tricks that they're pulling in order to make it very difficult, for example, for people who don't drive to have the right to vote, because you have to have a photo ID. And if you don't drive, you don't probably need a photo ID for anything other than voting. And so then you not only have they taken the step of forcing more people to go and get voter get photo IDs for voting, but they also because they complain about the cost of driver license offices, they shut down driver license offices in places where people who most need them in order to simply get a valid photo ID would be located, such as in inner cities or rural areas, in other words, or colleges and universities, in other words, places where people who are more likely to vote Democratic would be located. So you need to be aware of this issue. I believe that the one that was the voter ID bill that was passed by the state legislature was vetoed by Governor Bev Perdue. And as far as I know, it's the no matter how hard they try, they haven't been able to figure out a way to overcome the veto on that voter ID issue. But you could be sure by calling your senator or representative and telling them that it is, after all, you know, important for everybody to be able to vote, and you need to make it easy, not hard.
Thanks, Dick. So, folks, if you believe, as I definitely do, that the Supreme Court has gotten it very, very wrong, we can amend the Constitution to overrule them. Americans have done it before. Any number of times. Actually, there is a number, 27 times. And we can do it again. All because of successful constitutional amendment campaigns. Racial discrimination is illegal. Women can vote. We can elect U.S. senators.
18-year-olds can vote.
18, 19, and 20-year-olds can vote. Poll tax barriers to voting are illegal, although now they're bringing back something else, photo ID. We have a progressive income tax. All of these things resulted from successful constitutional amendment campaigns, many of them to overturn Supreme Court decisions that were wrong, wrong, wrong. Yeah. Now, they require
direct constitutional election of amendments.
That's what I said, Senator. Can elect senators.
Right. Okay.
Constitutional amendments require support from 2/3 of Congress and ratification by 3/4 of the states. God, that's still emblazoned in my brain from school. And so they're not easy, and they're not quick usually. But some of them, the 18-year-old vote, however, was a pretty quick one. Women's right to vote took decades. Right. So, but we can do it. That is the point. We can do it. So get out, get active, get involved, and help us turn this thing around. And thank you. I think that's about it. We're about ready to wrap up, shut down for the day, and we'll see you back here in another week. And one of these days we are going to do that 200-year-old. We have a timeline that was created by Wilf, by members of Wilf.
Right.
A timeline of the court decisions that, in fact, have given corporations these rights that they now take for granted and use against us.
Yeah. One of the things that's important to remember is that African Americans, slaves, were not able to vote for the amendment that freed the slaves. Women were not able to vote for the amendment that gave women the right to vote. So just think that these things are possible. And the same thing for the 18, 19, and 20-year-olds. They couldn't vote for that amendment either. As I recall, what happened in that amendment was Congress was being asked to create the amendment and pass it on to the states for ratification, and they refused. So then the people started putting together a constitutional convention that would have thrown the entire constitution open for modification, and that scared the Congress so much that they quickly got that amendment out there for the states to ratify.
Yeah, so let's scare them again.
Right.
By the way, before we close, everybody who did something for the Keystone XL pipeline, good job, because it really turned out so far really well. So
yes.
we've got momentum and we've got power. We just need to learn how to use it against the
right.
corporations and the 1%, the wealthiest Americans, who really don't want to share power or wealth or
right.
anything.
And you need to remember also that that before Occupy Wall Street happened, nobody talked at all about the 99% and the 1%. We changed the debate.
That's true.
We absolutely changed the entire debate.
Yes. So
congratulations to us.
Good pat on the back. Okay, and keep up the good work. We need it. We've got a long way to go.
Right. Okay, let's see what I can...
What are we going to wrap it up with?
Oh, something totally different. The Ritual Fire Dance from El Amor Brujo.
Okay. Thank you.
We'll have you with our regularly scheduled programming shortly, in about half a minute. In the meantime, I'll remind you that this is the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom show, The Wake Up Call. And this has been Dick Paddock and Tana Hartman, your co-hosts, talking about Citizens United and corporate personhood. So just remember, keep those corporations under control. Talk to you next week.